Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Franco family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
Hi, everybody. It's time for your Land and Livestock Report. You're on the Ag Information Network. I'm Russell Nemitz. Well, according to the Western Livestock Journal, even though U.S. retail sales of refrigerated plant-based meat alternatives have sharply declined, frozen alternatives show signs of stability. In fact, according to some new data from market information company Circana, in the past year leading up to September 29th, the combined sales of refrigerated and frozen plant-based meat dropped by 9% to $1.1 billion, with volumes down 9.9%. Most notably, refrigerated alternatives, 29% of the category, saw a year-over-year decline of nearly 23% to $22.6 million, while frozen options, 71% of the category, declined only 1.3%, totaling $54.3 million. So by contrast, traditional refrigerated and frozen meat sales rose 5.5% and 8.3% respectively compared to those refrigerated plant-based meat alternatives that are available in both the meat case and, of course, frozen coolers nationwide.
Bad theater seats, cheap Halloween masks, my apartment, all things with obstructed views. Add to these large trucks and buses. 18-wheelers and large buses have big blind spots and, like my apartment, they don't always have the best view. Bus and truck drivers deal with blind spots around the entire vehicle. Always take care not to ride alongside or too close behind them. Our roads, our responsibility. Learn more at sharetheroadsafely.gov.
The best place to reach a farmer with a farming solution message is when they're, well, farming. It's easy to find them during the day as most farmers are behind the wheel of their pickup truck or farm equipment with the radio on, listening to this station for the Ag Information Network of the West News. So reach real farmers right here, right now, as they listen to what's important to their farm operation. Give us a call and we'll connect you with our local farming community. They trust us, so they'll trust you.
For the Ag Information Network, I'm Russell Nemitz.
Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Franco family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
Wesley with Stove and Spa Center. It's finally getting cool and we don't want to leave you out in the cold. Stove and Spa Center has a great selection of stoves, inserts, and fireplaces to get you warm and cozy in your house this winter. Don't miss savings on freestanding stoves, gas inserts, and fireplaces. How would you like being warmer this winter and save money too? It's possible with a fireplace insert from Cozy Heat. Cozy Heat's highly efficient gas inserts and fireplaces come in many styles to fit any home's decor. Save big on Cozy Heat fireplaces and inserts during Stove and Spa Center's Big Autumn Sale. All products we offer are on our website at stoveandspa.com. Save big on Cozy Heat fireplaces and inserts during Stove and Spa Center's Big Autumn Sale going on right now. Don't miss out on all the special offers at Stove and Spa Center. 7485 El Camino Real, Atascadero between Curb Rail and Moore Roads.
Take it from me, folks. Don't let your ride go from ho, ho, ho to... oh, no!
When Santa's sleigh needs a tune-up, he trusts Shifting Gears Auto Repair.
You bet! A tune-up at Shifting Gears keeps my sleigh purring and my reindeer from asking for overtime.
Shifting Gears Auto Repair at 1621 North River Road in Paso Robles is your go-to for top-notch repairs and friendly service.
Paul Harvey's The Rest of the Story, brought to you by Frontier Floors and Window Coverings at 830 21st Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-7878 or online at frontierfloors.net.
The Rest of the Story. The divers could scarcely believe their eyes. They'd made dozens of exploratory dives in these waters before, each time hoping to find something remarkable, yet always returning to the surface empty-handed. But the incredible object they now beheld could not be taken away by hand or even by 100 hands. What is it, each wondered? For it answered the description of nothing any of them had ever seen. Big as a bus, one of them thought. They must measure it, so they did. 31 feet long, 10 feet in diameter, an 18-inch watertight hatch in the middle, cigar-shaped, as though somebody had tried to make a zeppelin out of oak planks 4 inches thick. That's right, oak. Even more striking was the superb craftsmanship, like nothing built today. Well, the answer was obvious. Whatever it was had not been built any recent day. So the coordinates were noted. The mystery was left in its dark resting place while the divers excitedly reported to the Naval Historical Society, Washington, D.C., and the Underwater Archaeological Society. Theories darted about like badminton shuttlecocks. A giant buoy of some kind, some said. A target for bomber pilots in training, others suggested. One historian wondered if it might have been afloat for one of the massive anti-submarine nets strung across coastal seaports during World War II. But in that case, what would it be doing all the way out there? Military officials had suspicions of their own. Most likely the sunken relic was a paravane, they conjectured, a vital component in a system designed by the United States Navy for dislodging and exposing floating mines. But no, answered naval historians, the object described by the divers and new expeditions to its grave were being planned every day. The object was not a paravane. So what was it? And whose was it? And why was it built? And how did it get there? Well, you're going to learn the rest of the story. Everybody was wrong. For once upon a doomed idea in the middle of World War II, there was an inventor named Michael Tim, T-Y-M. He created in his mind an all-purpose seagoing cargo tank. You could put fuel inside it, he envisioned, or anything that a ship had no room to store, and the ship could then tow it from the stern as it floated just below the surface. Mr. Tim even built a prototype, presented it to the United States Navy, but the Navy rejected it, so the disappointed inventor scuttled his invention and sent it to the bottom, where he believed it would rest undisturbed forever. But in the early 1900s, Michael Tim's creation was rediscovered by recreational divers. And this coming Sunday, May 2nd, 1999, the giant one-of-a-kind curiosity will be moved underwater by a team of dozens of volunteer divers and a fleet of towboats and relocated to a more suitable site for recreational diving exploration. The new home of this remarkable relic will be the bottom of Lake Michigan, just inside the breakwater, a quarter mile from the Chicago shoreline. For Michael Tim's once mysterious underwater archaeological artifact was originally recovered by divers in the old ship turning basin of the Chicago River in 17 feet of water. Now you know the rest of the story.
This hour of Sound Off on KPRL brought to you by Buy the Book Heating and Air, your local reliable heating and air expert. Call 805-423-5119.
238-5775. 238-KPRL. Sound Off continues on KPRL, the North County's number one choice for news, talk, and sports. This is Sound Off on The Right Choice, KPRL.
Welcome back to Sound Off. My name is Karen Vili, your host on Wednesday and Thursday afternoons. And today I have local watchdog, someone who I believe watches more of the elections, spends hours down at the county clerk recorders watching the counts, Darcia Stebbins. We are discussing issues with the counts in this county, primarily focused on the fact that it takes our county longer than almost anywhere else in the nation. California is the slowest, and last 2 years ago, we were the second slowest to count the ballots in the state of California. This year, we're also headed to be one of the top. I think we're currently in the top five, But as the bigger city, how they count you is how many ballots you have left. So you may have Orange County that is behind, has more ballots to count, but they usually then get theirs done before us, and we end up being one of the top two. Now, Darsha, we were talking about the issues in Morro Bay and Grover Beach, and the people working the polling stations didn't have they didn't handle things correctly, whether it was proper training or what happened. We can get into that later. But what is going to happen to the voters that were not properly logged in and then voted there at the poll? How will they end up? Will they end up being counted correctly?
Well, the ballots have all... Hi, Karen, back from that. And what we were speaking of specifically was a voter who has gone in to vote in person but was not asked to sign the voter roster, was given a precinct ballot. Those ballots have already been counted. Those were counted election night. So when I say counted, I mean tabulated, where the results go toward a candidate. And that, for a lot of the people, and especially for the candidates, where I'm referring to an in-person ballot, that is the polling column. And on the reports that we receive in San Luis Obispo County, there's a polling column and a vote-by-mail column. So the polling column is the in-person precinct ballot. So these people went into the precinct. They were at the correct precinct. I'm hoping they were at the correct precinct. And they should have signed the voter roster by their name and address. And there's a barcode there. And what I think happened is that people went into the precinct and did not sign the precinct roster. So there's no way of knowing, because it's not local people there handling our local communities. These people don't know one person from the other. So they can't go back to the voter roster and say, oh, yes, I saw Susie and I saw John and I saw David and I saw Mark. They voted in person. There's just not enough signatures to represent the number of ballots that got counted. So technically, the ballot has been counted, but they are not able to assign a voter to that ballot.
So what does that mean? So, will they count it or will they not count it in the long run?
It's counted. You can't go back to that precinct and say, okay, there were 117 ballots from precinct 117. Which one represents the name that we can't identify? There's no way to pull it back. So when somebody, the same type of thing occurred when a provisional ballot was issued to someone, but they didn't provide their information for a provisional envelope. So they didn't have a signature associated with that provisional ballot, and the provisional ballot was put into the precinct ballot box. So that means that that provisional ballot that came in on election night without an envelope, without a signature, that one will not be counted. The precinct ballots, the ones that were sent through election night, those have already been counted, but they don't know exactly who voted.
So, Darsha...
So it's a bit of a mess. I mean, if I'm a CPA. If I was an auditor and I designed this process that we currently have in our county and in our state, I would have been fired. I would have been in jail. There's no way to have a chain of custody with a vote-by-mail ballot so that you know which person sent in that ballot, signed that signature, and that it's a valid, legal, registered voter. There's no way that you can 100% determine that that's the case. And I have a problem with that. And I have a problem with voters wanting to vote in person and being discouraged from voting in person on election day, because that is constitutional.
And so what do you think could have, is this that the clerk recorder's office didn't properly train people? How do we have so many issues every election cycle with this type of thing? What do you think could have been done differently?
So the training process can be much better. The precinct workers, these are not volunteers. These are people that are paid. They become, for one day, a contract worker for the county. And so the county conducts training sessions, and there were more sessions this time. But each time, we continue to see where there are issues with the actual each clerk. There's a precinct clerk, and it's a lot of responsibility on a precinct inspector being in charge of that precinct, because they make it such a complicated process, and they follow the minutiae when in fact there's really one, two, or three different scenarios that are going to happen 98% of the time that day. So if there was a demo, or if there was a run-through, or a dress rehearsal of sorts, then those precinct workers would be able to handle almost anything that was coming their direction. But the training is not mandatory for the precinct workers. It is mandatory for the inspectors, but it's not mandatory for those precinct workers. And there were a lot of precinct workers that, you know, maybe they wanted to be part of the process, but it does take a certain skill set to be detail-oriented and to make sure that you're doing your job properly, even according to these insidious rules that are out there for them. So the training process is not sufficient, in my mind, and it's not required. And they could do a demo run-through dress rehearsal so that each person could be trained for their position and be able to, you know, you might have one or two or three really odd things. But when you've complicated the entire polling location, made it more, you don't have local people running their local precincts, it makes it, you get it further and further and further from the voter to the counting of the vote is essentially the problem.
And what, let's talk about Chandon for a moment. Tell us what happened in Chandon. And what do you think should have been done so that did not occur?
Well, Chandon, it is a remote polling location, considering, you know, you have populated areas in San Luis Obispo City. But still, Chandon has, I think the number is 692 registered voters out there. It's a whole community. They used to run their whole polling location so that it would be neighbors and, hey, you know, Susie's sick, can Marge come in, or whatever. And now what they have is they have people who are being assigned the Chandon location from San Luis Obispo, South County. And my understanding is what occurred, they may have known the night before, but certainly the morning of the election, as polls open at 7 a.m., they only had two people that showed up to be the precinct workers for that day. So at that point, I think another person who was a local person that had worked precincts before said, hey, I'll be here, I'll help you, but I have to leave at some point in time. What ended up occurring is that the Chandon precinct was completely shut down and moved to the Creston polling location. So then you had three precincts inside a fairly small community center there in Creston. So anyone who was a Chandon voter, and I did hear of one situation that she drove by the Clark Center there and said, oh, good, I can see it's open, drove past it, went to the store, came back, and it had been closed down. So for her to be able to vote in person or as a Chandon resident, she would need to drive to Creston to be able to sign the voter roster that had now moved to Creston. I understand that there were people that were calling the librarian and saying, hey, can I drop off my ballot hey, how do I get my ballot? Can you take it for me? And she was willing to, anybody before the end of the day, she was willing to take the ballot then to the Creston location. So that to me was unconscionable. And I even said, you know, if I had known, I would go out to Shandon. I live remote. I live out San Miguel, in rural San Miguel. I'd be willing to drive to Creston so that people could come in and vote in person on election day. But there was no such call. There was no such backup. They just closed it down. All they needed to do was call in another precinct worker to be able to hold that precinct and hold it open.
Let me get a caller in. Welcome to Sound Off. What would you like to ask Darsha?
Well, I got a little bit more to the story, and Darsha can finish it. So the 1,200 approximate people that live in Creston weren't allowed to vote in Creston. They had to drive to Atascadero. So the people from Paso Robles in the outlying area drove to Creston voting for Paso Robles School District. The people in Creston had to drive 20 miles each way somewhere else, and then the power went out in the Creston area. How do you run a polling place with no backup generator?
And that's also what I was getting to, is that the Shandon, the people from Shandon, when they moved to Creston, at about 6:30 at night in Creston, the power went out. And so you have the Shandon people trying to come to Creston, finding out that they have to vote with a flashlight, literally. I think later they had some kind of lantern that gave a little bit more light, but having to vote by flashlight at the community center. And then there were others that came from Shandon to go into the second floor of the Atascadero Library to be able to cast a vote. And they were actually running out of ink. So there was a line there, and a lot of the people left and went to other precincts, but they ran out of ink or toner in the precinct ballot printer.
We've got about 5 seconds. We're going to have to take a word from our sponsors, and we'll be back with more with Darsha Stebbins.
Can you say aye, aye, aye?
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Liz Klayman, and this is the Fox Business Report.
The major averages pairing from bigger losses in the final hour of trading and ending mixed as investors await earnings from chipmaker giant NVIDIA after the closing bell, giving Wall Street the latest look into the strength of artificial intelligence trading. NVIDIA's earnings will be the last of the Magnificent Seven tech megacaps to deliver financial results. Tech stocks were among the worst performers today, while healthcare and energy gained. Netflix hitting an all-time high for a third straight day, with its stock up over 1%. Target shares tumbling over 20%. For its worst day in 2.5 years after releasing disappointing quarterly results. The Dow winners, Amgen, United Health Group, and IBM. The Dow decliners, Home Depot, Visa, and Amazon. The Dow up 140 points, the Nasdaq lower by 21, S&P 500 up a fraction. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, let's face it, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. There's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
Buyers will qualify for all incentives and programs. Financing through select lenders on select Ram trucks only. Not all buyers will qualify. On approved credit. Offers on in-stock new 24 Ram 1500s only. See dealer for details.
Black Friday means doorbuster deals on Ram trucks at Malahi Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. Sean, details, please.
Hi, it's Sean Kaler from Malahi Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. Right now, during the Black Friday sales event, take up to $20,000 off the last of the new 24 Ram 1500s. That's up to $20,000 off the Ram truck you're looking for. Or take advantage of 0.9% financing for up to 72 months. Ram trucks at these prices and rates won't last long. Once they're gone, they're gone. These offers are for the public only, so please no dealers.
Take up to $20,000 off new 24 Ram 1500s or get 0.9% financing for up to 72 months during the Black Friday sales event going on now at Malahi Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. We'll see you next to Lowe's. Dude.
Time for the 22nd annual Cowgirl Christmas with over 200 local Western holiday artists and vendors at the Paso Robles Event Center on November 29th and 30th, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. daily. Go to cowgirlchristmaspaso.com.
The Sound Off lines are open at 238-5775, 238-KPRL. The North County's listening to you on Sound Off.
Welcome back to Sound Off. My name is Karen Vealey, your host on Wednesday and Thursday afternoons. I'm also an investigative reporter for Cal Coast News. Posted a story last night regarding Paso Robles City Manager Ty Lewis, who was not supposed to come back to the city. He filed a $2.25 million judgment claim against the city. After it was rejected, he started back at work today. We don't know what happened in the closed session meeting last night, but what we do know is there were no sanctions taken against City Council member Chris Bausch, as was alleged was going to happen. They came out and said no action taken, and now Ty Lewis is back at work. Today we have Darsha Stebbins, a local activist regarding local elections. She is walking us through what is happening, why it is so slow to get things done, to get the ballots counted in San Luis Obispo County. We're also, you can ask her your questions, 238-5775. Now, Darsha, one of the things I also wonder, do you think with Donald Trump winning the elections, do you believe this could have an impact on voter ID requirements and changes in elections throughout the nation?
Well, Karen, I surely hope so, because without voter ID, we really do not have a way to determine whether a person, an actual living human being that shows up at the polls, that has a voter ID, to be able to ensure that those that person is a legally registered voter, and to be able to count that vote and tie it to that legal vote. So I've been called an election denier. I don't deny that we have elections. I just deny that they're being counted accurately. And a voter ID goes a long way to be able to determine whether a legal vote has been cast.
And Darsha, let's get back to Greg Graywall. The allegations that he is, you know, what he is saying happened at the Creston polling place. What do you think should be done regarding the claims that, not the claims, what happened in Creston?
Well, for sure, every polling location that's selected to be a polling location should be ADA compliant. It should be something where there's backup. This was after the time change. We all know when the time change is going to happen, so it gets dark earlier. So at 5:30 at night, you need to have additional provisions for making sure that that polling location has adequate lighting, that it's safe for people to be able to park their cars and get out of their cars and get into the polling location. So it's the polling sites themselves. If it had been held at the fire station in Creston, let's say, the fire station has an emergency backup generator. But all it would have taken is perhaps to have two or three of those small little lanterns, $10 a piece, put in the supply bin, and you can pop them up and you have LED lighting. I'm just saying that there's some things that can be done that can be done ahead of time in order to be able to have an election day go smoothly. I mean, you know, there was across the country they were talking about potentially having cybersecurity issues, having bomb threats, having all of these different things. But there's some small things that can be done in order to improve the voting experience on election day. And what has transpired in the last several years, especially since COVID, especially since the 100% mail out of all of the ballots, is that the election day experience has been diminished, discouraged, and I believe that it is disenfranchising voters and it's getting the counting of the votes further away from the casting of the ballot.
And
how so to answer your question, voter ID will go a long way. We have to show an ID for just about everything we do in our lifetime. So having a driver's license, having some form of identification that says that it doesn't even prove that we're a legal citizen, which is a requirement, but at least it does say, here is the voter's name and their residence, which are the two things that are on the voter roll. But with a vote-by-mail ballot, we have no way to know if the person who is representing is represented on that envelope with a signature, if that actual person casts that ballot.
And, you know, the other allegation is that people have a right to vote in person and that moving around the polling stations, where the polling station in your area was for another area, and was a type of voter suppression. Do you agree with that allegation?
I do, because it ended up that anyone who was casting a provisional ballot was not casting the same races, was not being able to vote in the same races that they would have been if they were casting an in-person precinct ballot.
If you were the clerk recorder, what would you have done differently?
So we've known the date of the election for a long time. I think it's a huge logistics nightmare in some ways, and they have had some people resigning and retiring. So there's been some changeover in personnel. But ultimately, we know this day is coming, and November 5th, and we could have had better training for the precinct workers. We had a lot of people that we were recommending sign on, please become. They wanted to be part of the process. We suggested go to slowvote.com. Sign up to be a precinct worker. And what we were hearing is that only certain people were being assigned and they weren't being called back, and that there were, although there's about 600, 700 people that are assigned to the polling location, that some of them weren't being assigned. And in fact, an email went out to about 200 people is what we were hearing, saying, we have waiting lists, we don't need you, thank you very much. And all of those people could have been called in if needed, rather than shutting down a precinct, rather than having the training issues that we had, rather than having the precinct workers that we had. Perhaps there were some that weren't asked back, that had previous precinct worker training, that could have done a better job than the ones that were in place. Polling locations, moving them all around, created chaos.
And what was was there any allegations? I have been told that certain people's, there's a preference toward party. Do you believe the parties had anything to do with who was party affiliation impacted who was selected to work at the polling places?
Well, I will just say that it's more towards the conservative voters, because I have people that come to me want to be observers, want to be precinct workers. I don't ask them what their party preference is. I don't even know what it is. In some cases, I have, you know, some of them I do know. But if it's a Democrat, if it's a no party preference person, a Libertarian, Independent, they want to be part of the voting process. So I just recommend, you know, go to slowvote.com, sign up to be a precinct worker. And at first, in July, August, and even into September, the person that they had assigned to that was being very cordial and back and forth, and yes, okay, we'll get you assigned. But about a month before the ballots went out, or as the ballots were going out, there's something that changed. And at that point in time, people were being moved around, reassigned, or not assigned. And so that's when I think there was some change that occurred at the county elections department. And I haven't been able to verify what that change was, but I do know that there was a difference in how people were being assigned or not assigned.
Welcome to Sound Off. What would you like to ask Darsha today?
Hi, Darsha. Is there any standing for, like, some type of, injunction or lawsuit or something? Because from what you're saying, it sounds like people's constitutional rights are not being, obeyed by, or, like, this whole people showing up and then being told to go somewhere else. Anyways, I'll take my answer off air. I'm out on the ballot.
Thank you for calling in.
And what I would say to that is, you know, I do believe that the elections process in our county has been complicated and has perhaps by design to allow more time for ballots to be processed so that certain ballots can be counted or counted first and go toward results, because we have our elections, our local elections, where some people have already, said, yes, I must be the winner. I have more votes than everyone else. And look, it's 2 weeks after the election. But I'm letting you know that I don't think that a single vote-by-mail ballot that was dropped off on Election Day has been counted. Those are supposed to be counting, you know, within days and move through this process. But I believe they're counted today. And Ms. Cano has indicated that she will have a count by 5 p.m. today, likely sooner than that. I'm hoping that it will be at least 10, 15, maybe even 20,000 ballots. They can run them through the tabulators that fast. The problem is the whole processing time, the time where it takes to signature match, to scan them in, signature match, open them, lay them flat, look them over for any food stains or anything like that to make sure they can go through the tabulators, and then they stack up, and then finally they go through the tabulators. But because they took that 8 or 9 days to try to balance out the precinct ballots, and they have to do the 1% manual tally, which is a whole separate deal. It's required by law, but it doesn't audit the ballots, and it doesn't prove anything. They've had to delay. We are now the third. If it weren't for Orange County and I think San Diego County, we would be the last, the most ballots still outstanding to be processed. I think that's going to change today, but maybe not, because they were supposed to report in yesterday, and I haven't seen the update on that. But we have local elections that are within 50, 100, even, as you know, gets down to 13 ballots. So this is not even close to being over. We've probably processed about two-thirds of the ballots that are coming in. So we still have 50,000 ballots to be counted.
Welcome to Sound Off. What would you like to add to the conversation today?
Hi, trying to straighten out that confusion of local San Luis Obispo conservatives telling each other we need to vote in person. And then some places like Dan Bongino, for example, saying vote early to conservatives. In San Luis Obispo County, you can't vote in person early, but you can elsewhere. So voting in person in voting early, is that possible some places, but not in San Luis? Is that why we were given kind of mixed wind to vote, or people thought they were being confused?
Yeah, that's actually correct. So in California, there are 29 counties that are considered vote center counties. It's the Voters' Choice Act. And with that, then, you actually can go to a kiosk, you can vote on a machine, you can have your precinct with that machine and vote. It's counted as an in-person vote, even though it's before Election Day.
We gotta take a word from our sponsors, and I'll be back when we can finish up this conversation.
As the markets have their ups and downs, real estate remains one of the most stable assets in everyone's portfolio. Hi, this is Cindy Mims, owner broker of Colony Mortgage, voted best mortgage company in North County 3 years running. We offer conventional FHA, VA, and reverse mortgages and 100% purchase loans for first-time home buyers. Are you a builder and tired of the red tape when dealing with banks and expensive hard money loans? I have a great new option. Or are you 62 years or older? You can possibly eliminate your monthly mortgage payment and get cash in your pocket. At Colony Mortgage, we have hometown service with competitive rates. We have years of experience with creative financing to find that right loan for you. If it's credit issues stopping you, let us help. We moved from our 20-year Atascadero location and now offer two convenient locations to meet personally in Atascadero and Paso Robles. Call 805-466-3598. Thank you for supporting your local businesses.
Paso Robles Glass is exclusively presenting the new Milgard Trinzic Series windows and doors. If you're looking for a vinyl window frame that is contemporary with modern crisp lines, you'll love the new Trinzic Series from Milgard and Paso Robles Glass. Give your home a clean, sleek look with less vinyl and more glass to enjoy your view. Whether it's new construction or replacement, Paso Robles Glass has a window for you. And remember, they are the replacement window masters. Call Paso Robles Glass for your free in-home sales consultation for Milgard Trinzic windows and doors. Call Paso Robles Glass, 805-238-4014. That's 238-4014 for Paso Robles Glass.
Get it fast, save some cash, Paso Glass is where it's at.
Do you use propane for your home or business? Family-owned and operated, Delta Liquid Energy has provided local area residents with dependable and courteous propane service since 1936. From home heating and cooking to powering your irrigation engine pump or forklift, propane can do it all. Don't forget their location. Paso Robles refills propane bottles of all sizes Monday through Friday and has a dump station for your RV. Learn more. Call Delta Liquid Energy, 805-239-0616, or go online, deltaliquidenergy.com.
Gold is at an all-time high. Now is the time to take your scrap gold and turn it into cash or trade it in for new jewelry at Bella Jewel Fine Jewelry in Paso Robles. Take the old or broken bracelets, chains, rings, or trinkets that you never wear and go home with cash in your pocket or get an additional 25% off to use towards a new item. Bella Jewel Fine Jewelry is family-owned and located at 1224 Pine Street in the heart of downtown Paso Robles. Open Wednesday through Saturday.
Welcome back to Sound Off. My name is Karen Vili. I'm your host on Wednesday and Thursday afternoons. And Darsha, could we have 2 days of in-person voting if we want it?
I think that needs to go through the Board of Supervisors and also through the Secretary of State, because my understanding is that you can do that, but it has to go through the legislative process and have approval. So even two or some of the counties will go 3 days of voting in person. So Sunday, half-day Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday, they can vote in person. Now, I'm not sure, given where we are today, I'm not sure that that will actually do much to help. What would help is to recognize that the whole promotion of the vote by mail ballot process and having the counting take so long, it disenfranchises the voters and it decreases the confidence that people have in our elections process. I just want voters to be able to vote in the manner in which they want to be able to process their vote or have their vote counted, and then to have it be accurately counted in our county. So the bottom line is that there's a huge amount of room for improvement, even with the system we have right now. And it just is very, very discouraging to hear the reports from people saying what their voting experience was like going in person and trying to vote at their precinct. Now, I have lots of reports from people who go, everything went great, it was a positive experience, I came in, people were happy, they wanted to help me get through, I wanted to vote in person, and everything went great. And I can almost tell you exactly which precincts those were, because there were people that we know that know the process and want to encourage people to vote. If we had 100 more of those types of precinct workers, Election Day would be totally different, and the counting process can definitely be improved at the clerk recorder's office. I think she ended up creating chaos, perhaps trying to not have some of the votes counted as early as possible against local races.
Why would she do that?
Well, if you have a candidate, let's say, I'm theorizing, I'm a conspiracy theorist, so if I was theorizing that conservative voters typically vote in person on Election Day, and I had a candidate who was not a conservative candidate, and recognize I'm not saying Republican, Democrat, whatever it is, conservative candidate, then I would want the delay of the processing of the ballots so that my candidate would be out in the lead for as long as possible. And it just leaves a potential for a longer chain of custody and a longer time before those ballot counts get issued.
And so, again, how do we get to where we're back in California? A lot of this has to do with California rules. They have changed the rules completely. All these different agencies log you in to vote, so people will get two or three ballots for the same person, sometimes with the middle initial, sometimes with the shortened first name. How could that be fixed, based on the fact that a lot of this started with state mandates?
Yeah, it did. It actually started back with HAVA, which was the Help Americans Vote Act. That was back in 2002. That was supposed to be a zero-trust type of system where you didn't have to trust the machines. You didn't have to trust certain things. It was auditable, verifiable, et cetera. So then we had the Motor Voter Act, and every single thing that has been placed in legislatively has worked to decrease the amount of verification that's possible, to decrease the transparency. So we have to get to a system where you have one person, one vote, one time. So the voter ID goes a long ways to do that, to having in-person voting with the majority of your voters, having it be the exception rather than the rule to having that vote by mail ballot. It's really just that we can't confirm a person has actually mailed in or dropped off that vote by mail ballot. The signature is the only safeguard, and signatures, as you know, it just has to be close enough to be accepted. But every election we have almost 800, 900 vote-by-mail ballots that don't get cured, meaning the signature doesn't match or they didn't have a signature or date on the
on the outside of the envelope. That is completely eliminated if you have an in-person vote. So I've seen where somebody has a vote-by-mail ballot that got torn or the dog ate it or whatever. They're trying to repair that vote-by-mail ballot. They're at their precinct, and all that has to be done is a precinct ballot be given to that person. They sign the roster, and their vote is counted.
Yes, yes. The other thing is, I wonder if nationally, if they make some changes, how that'll impact what is going on here. But also, remember, there was a lawsuit out of there was a voter rights lawsuit against L.A. County and the state of California because you had people that, you know, were deceived. They had more people voting than residents legally allowed to vote in that area. And they ended up saying, yes, it was a mess. And the state said, we're going to now order the clerk recorders to clean up these ballots. But if people are still getting three ballots, what's happening to the required cleanup of the rosters?
Not much. And even though the county does go through and take off people who are deceased, I mean, I do know that they do that and periodically. In theory, that VoteCal system is the statewide database, and it is updated at least every hour. So what you get is people are continuing to stay on the voter rolls, even if they have moved out of the county and even if they have moved out of state. So I do research with the voter rolls, and I can show where there are about 3,000 ballots that are being mailed to out-of-state, out-of-county residences, including out-of-state. So they've maybe moved 2 or 3 years ago. But unless the county has a verification signed by that voter saying, I am no longer a registered voter in San Luis Obispo County, they aren't able to remove them, or they don't. So if perhaps we want to put together an initiative, just a local citizen sending things out to people who are out of state,
let me bring a ballot
and get them off the voter roll.
Let me bring in one last caller. Welcome to Sound Off. What would you like to add to the conversation? You're on the air. Welcome to Sound Off. Well, they're
Hi,
gone.
Karen. and Karen, there's one other huge area that I find very troubling, and that is that you can have a U.S. citizen anywhere in the world register online to vote in our county and our county elections by identifying their most closely related residents. So someone in Singapore can register online that is a, quote, U.S. citizen that most closely identifies with a residence in Cambria and can vote in all of the Cambria elections
for that particular location. You can do it, but I do think it needs to be highly looked at. Welcome to Sound
Off.
We have
over 1,000 in our county.
What would you like to bring to the conversation?
I would have one thing to say. Darcy Stebbins for county recorder and Dale Gustin for supervisor, and let's get rid of these mail-in ballots.
Okay, well, thank you. It's more important to me that people, if I had thought that my vote is not going to be counted because I put in a vote-by-mail ballot, or that my vote is not going to be counted because of how something was addressed at the precinct and it wasn't addressed properly, I'd be very, very upset. And so we do have a place where people can make a citizen's report. That is at slowsheriff.org. Make a report, citizen's report, submit a report. And if you want to track your ballot and find out whether or not it has been counted or at least the signature been matched and
you
approved.
You got about 10 seconds.
To be counted.
And then we got
it's at ballottrack.com, two L's, two T's. And that X, the ballot tracks is with an X.
Thanks for coming on the show today, Darsha.
Was brought to you by the Work Family Ranch, the perfect outdoor activity for any level rider. Book your horseback ride today, 805-467-3362, or go to workranch.com.
AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.
It's 2.